So this is the PNB Coordinating Committee meeting. It's Friday, June 14th, 2019. It's 7:36 p.m. Central Time. I'm Bill Crozier, director from KPFT, convening the meeting. And let me call the roll. Or do you want to call the roll, Grace, or somebody else want to do that?
You can do it, Bill.
Okay. Grace Aaron?
Here.
Okay. Sabrina Jacobs?
Here.
Donald Goldmecker? Can't hear you, Donald. Lawrence Reyes?
Present.
Okay, thank you. James Egerton? Can't hear you, James. Nancy Sorden? Can't hear you, Nancy. Maxie Jackson?
Present.
Thank you, Maxie. And Tamara Swiderski? I don't believe she's on the call. Okay, so we have five, so we have quorum. Did everybody get the draft agenda I sent out earlier today?
Yes.
Okay, I forgot to put an approve agenda on it. is there anything we want to...
Yeah, I got it.
Anything you want to add or change on the agenda before we move on to other things?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Well, I guess the next thing is to elect a committee chair and secretary, and I suggest we do pro tem versions of both of those since we only have five committee members present. Is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
So this will be pro tem until the next meeting. So nominations are open for pro tem chair.
I nominate Lawrence Reyes.
Okay. Maxine,
I have to decline. I got too much stuff going on. Thank you, though.
I'll nominate Sabrina. Sounded like maybe an okay. Just for this meeting, right?
I guess. Just for now, though.
Just okay. Now. Any other nominations? Okay, do I hear on the motion to elect Sabrina as chair pro tem by acclamation?
So moved.
Okay. Thank you, Grace. Any objections? Okay, hearing none, then Sabrina, you're our chair pro tem, so I'll let you take over.
Okay, so June 14th, 2019, at 39 p.m., convening the coordinating, the Pacific National Board Coordinating Committee meeting. Role was already taken by Bill and Mr. Sabrina Jacobs pro tem chair. On the agenda, let's see if we respond to order. We've done the roll call. We've established quorum. We need a secretary.
Maxie to the stack.
Go ahead, Maxie.
It's difficult to understand what you're saying. For some reason, you're real muffled. I don't know if you can speak directly into the phone or something.
Yeah, I noticed that too.
Let's see here.
Or if you can get closer to your microphone.
Yeah, just not on speakerphone.
Okay, so we need a secretary. Anybody want to be the secretary for Tim? Going once, going twice.
Well, I'll do it for tonight if you want.
Okay, appreciate it.
I'm already taking some notes. But...
Okay.
But if somebody else wants to do it, that's fine too.
Right. Actually, you know what? Can we actually get a description of the coordinating committee and compare it to the strategic planning committee? Because it seems like they're the same thing to me. But if we can get that on the record, that would be great. Bill or Grace?
I sent out from the bylaws a description of the coordinating committee's responsibilities. Okay. It was in that email I sent out yesterday, I believe. And it was also at the bottom of the email I sent today. And by the way, did we...
For the bylaw of this committee shall coordinate...
Did we elect me as pro tem secretary?
Mm-hmm.
Did we elect me as pro tem secretary?
Acclamation. No one objected to it.
Okay.
I acclaim that.
Okay, I'll put down that Grace moved that. I mean, elected acclamation. Okay.
This is Donald. Just to let you know, I'm on the call.
Hi, Donald.
Thank you, Donald.
Hi.
Okay, so I'll read into the record. Per the bylaws, this committee, the coordinating committee, shall coordinate board activities between meetings, which committee shall include as members all foundation officers and at least one director from each radio station area, but shall not include any non-director LSB delegates, provided, however, that the coordinating committee shall not be considered an executive committee and shall not exercise any powers of the board without board approval. So that's Article 8, Section 3. And so here we are, the second or third, let's see here, no, we have a motion, an informed action from Maxi that was referred to this committee by the National Board, Pacifica National Board. Maxi, would you like to go ahead and read your motion, please, on informed action?
Sure, thank you. Whereas the Pacifica Foundation is part of a larger public media ecosystem, and therein a member of greater public and public radio program directors with access to resources, tools, and best practices to inform current and future approaches to radio station operations. Whereas Pacifica Foundation boards and committees are comprised of non-media professionals and or individuals without expertise relevant to the boards and or committees in which they serve, in addition to those with direct expertise and experience. And whereas anecdote, tradition, and belief are lesser than research-based and data-driven expertise and experience, therefore, be it resolved that the Pacifica Foundation will require all Pacifica National Board committees to allocate at least 30 minutes of meeting time quarterly for edification. The chairs of the Pacifica National Board and committees will coordinate inviting and scheduling experts in the non-commercial media field with the executive director. Additionally, the PNB and committees will be required to articulate takeaways from these information sessions and what can be useful for Pacifica stations moving forward during regularly scheduled Pacifica National Board meetings. And if I could motivate it, it is essential for the governance of this media organization to be deeply informed of industry standards and best practices regarding revenue centers, multimedia content, financial management, compliance, governance, human resources, and other aspects of non-commercial media. For too long, Pacifica has operated as an island, not taking advantage of research-based and data-driven expertise and knowledge. Transformation to a sustainable and progressive media enterprise offering true public service is dependent upon informed action. That's the name of the motion.
Okay, so let's see here. You didn't read the therefore be it resolved part, did you?
I did.
Oh,
I can repeat it if you'd like.
That's cool. Okay, great. So Maxi has motivated. We'll take another one for it. Or we can take another one against it. Let's take another one. Let's take one against it. Who is against this particular motion set forth by Pacifica's executive director, Maxi Jackson?
Chair, request for information. This is Lawrence.
Sure, go ahead, Lawrence.
Thank you. So, Maxi, what was your thinking around this? Other than what's in the body of the motion. Elucidate me in regards to what was your thinking and what's your philosophy behind this?
Absolutely. So I think the members of this committee know that on a weekly basis, I meet with the staff of our stations, the business managers, the program directors, and the general managers. And what is very evident is that most of them have really not been exposed to industry standard professional information, systems, tools of the non-commercial media field. It's been well documented in that since. And I'll just give you a few examples. Our program directors, none of them had ever used Arbitron research, had never done any analysis based upon it, and yet it's an industry standard. When it comes to our business managers, it's, again, been well documented that many of them utilize accounting practices that are not industry standard. And I could go on. What I also do is attend most of the PMB committee meetings that occur, and that's everything from finance and audit and programming, and you go down the list. I attend at least two or three a week. And in those meetings, what becomes quite evident is that we have people on our boards who are, I think, extremely well-intended. They have the best interest in their mind of the organization. But what I hear often are people proposing motions, providing opinion, conjecture, not based on any kind of understanding of the field or the area that we're discussing, but based on anecdote, based on belief, based on, you know, what they think is good or proper versus a real knowledge, knowing, and often experience. An example of that is the Strategic Planning Committee did an entire presentation, if you will, around what underwriting is. There were many members of the committee who could not get off the notion that underwriting implies corporate support. Really struggled with the notion of any kind of underwriting being undertaken, because they could never get off this notion that underwriting can be done without corporate support. It went further in that one of the motions presented was so overwhelming in terms of the implementation of it that there's no way it could actually be a functional policy with any kind of understanding of how underwriting happens, in the sense that you could have a small business approach you on a Friday saying they want to run spots. I'm just giving obviously a long-winded example, but they want to do spots that air that weekend. The policy that was proposed would have approval by the board of directors, the PMB board of directors, and not the station itself. And you can just, if anyone knows underwriting, knows that, you know, having to go to the national board for approval of scripts or underwriting runs or the clients themselves is just onerous. And so the whole genesis of this proposal comes from those experiences, number one, witnessing all too often people proposing motions that are ill-informed or misinformed about how radio station operations actually occurs. Yeah, thank you. The other part of it is I just think we should all be in the pursuit of continued education. It's important for the members of our board to be updated on new trends, new industry standards, best practices, and really get a real deep understanding of effective radio station operations. And by bringing expertise into our meetings on a quarterly basis, I think that we can begin edifying our committee members and our boards in ways that I think are quite useful. So that's the reason for it.
Chair, can I have a follow-up question, please?
Hold on a second. I'd like to put myself on the stack. Go ahead with your follow-up question, Morris.
Thank you. Matthew, there are those professionals that say that Arbitrons and the Nielsen ratings do not really serve a media conglomerate like ours. I understand some of what you said in regards to, I agree that everybody needs to come up to industry standards and the such, but is there any other matrix that could be used in regards to how to measure our success other than Arbitrons that have been found to be biased in regards to our audience as well as racially insensitive? So is there any other matrix that you can use other than Arbitron and Nielsen, since we are somewhat of a non-traditional media network?
Yeah, my response is that I think the premise is false, respectfully. I think Arbitron, PPM, they've done a lot to improve the quality of the research that they do. I think we're holding on to narratives that certainly were true when it was a diary methodology. And I think the evidence that bears out that's not the case anymore, at least that it's been corrected, if you will, is that in urban centers, the top stations are often stations that appeal to people of color. And so the biases that were expressed about that, I think, they've done a decent job of correcting that. But the bigger issue around this particular matter of using Arbitron PPM audience data is without it, what happens with our program directors is they are making uninformed decisions about the effectiveness of programming because they're only using one measurement tool, really, and that is how well a show fundraises. You cannot legitimately program a station without audience data. You can never know if a program is growing in audience or decreasing without audience data. You can never know if one program transitions well into another in terms of maintaining audience without audience data. There's too many variables that our program directors are now learning about because of the use of TapScan Web and just basic instruments of Arbitron and PPM that allow you to do analysis that goes well beyond anything that Pacifica has been using in quite some time. And that's also important because when you look at our audiences in the five markets we serve, none of our stations are in the top 40 in the markets that they serve. And so we have proven unequivocally that if you don't use instruments like audience data, you will perform poorly. We've proven that. What we need to show is that by utilizing research audience data in addition to analysis from how well programs are performing financially, as well as whether they're on mission with our progressive agenda, whether the talent is improving their skill sets, those are all the variables I would want to include in an analysis of whether a program should be on the air, whether it's programmed at the right time of day, whether it's lined up with the right programming either before it or after it. And so those, that's why I would argue it's important to have those tools. I would not say it should be the only tool you use, as I just stated, but it certainly is a vital one.
Okay. Thank you.
And Bill, to the stack.
Can you put me back on the stack chair, please? Thank you.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, after me. I just like to correct the record as far as, or go on the record as correcting the people's belief as far as underwriting is concerned. It's not that it's people are have this fear. I mean, it is because of the fear of being corporatized. However, it mainly drills down to the dictation of programming, not necessarily the corporatization, but the dictation of programming. At least that's the space that I'm coming from. Trader Joe's or some mom and pop farmer's market or what have you. Okay, well, you got to put, you know, so-and-so's farm on and talk about how great their cantaloupes are, what have you. You know what I mean? It's just that's what people are afraid of. They're afraid of that dictation of programming. Now, on to your
Can I make sure I get a chance to respond to that before you go?
Sure. As far as this motion is concerned, I mean, is there a structure for it? Do you have a launch date, content? Who's going to be teaching these 30-minute spots?
I think it's
integrated into the schedule.
Sure.
I mean, it's only 30 minutes, which is, you know, that makes sense. Only taking 30 minutes out of a week, out of a month.
It's 30 minutes.
Mandatory, not mandatory. Do we have all the guts and stuff, or is that worked out yet, or how are you trying to put that together?
Well,
who's going to be helping you?
Sorry for interrupting.
No, it's okay. Go ahead.
So the response I would give you is I left it 30 minutes quarterly because I think, as Bill actually mentioned when I first brought this up, he would hope it would happen more often. I put 30 minutes quarterly because I think we want to make it a transitional frequency, if you will, that allows people to get comfortable with the notion that on a quarterly basis, a certain committee will bring an expert in to explain different aspects of radio station operations or financial management or governance or whatever. In terms of who's going to do it, we, as I mentioned in the prologue, if you will, at the beginning of the motion, we're members now of two distinguished organizations in Greater Public and Public Radio Program Directors that both do an excellent job of not only consulting on an individual basis with patients, but also providing webinars and conferences around these areas of learning. And so they certainly would be one place to pull resource for the edification of our members. The other, there's a bounty of other experts in the field that we could pull from. I won't go down a list, but I think if you think of any topic area, certainly working with me, the chair of those various committees, they could either recommend folks and we could agree that that person is appropriate, or I can work with them to bring expertise that I've known from my years of experience in the field, who can provide that coaching or teaching, if you will. So that's sort of the structural answer. I hope I answered it enough to satisfy you. I wanted to address the first part, though, that you mentioned, and that is the fear of underwriting. Anyone who has done underwriting knows that to be compliant from an FCC standpoint, there are three things you cannot do. You cannot do a call to action, you cannot give price, and you cannot do a qualitative statement. The other thing that's more important than all three of those things is that there should always be a firewall between editorial and underwriting. And so by not having policy, and I know this is a bit off topic, by not having policy, what happens currently is we have stations who are engaging in forms of underwriting without policy governing.
Okay, please, a point of order, point of order, point of order. It's completely improper, and this is a publicly streamed meeting. I don't believe that there have been FCC violations. So anyway, it would be misguided to insinuate that on a public stream.
I will,
especially coming from the position of executive director, as chairman of the board, that would need to be. We shouldn't be mentioning any specifics regarding that on a public stream.
I don't disagree. I apologize for making a statement. What I will say to you is that it's important that in an area where we can be fined by the FCC if things are done improperly, that we have a policy that governs whether stations decide to do it or not. It just makes sense to have policy on that matter. So I would push back on this notion that people are fearful that, if people did underwriting, you'd have to bring the underwriter on your show. That would be completely inappropriate. Approach to underwriting, but again, that digress. That's not really what this is about.
Don't tell Oprah, Maggie. That's not what I'm insinuating. All I said was that there would be a dictation of programming. That's it. As far as drilling down into specifics of anything, that's I'm not going down that road. Lawrence, go ahead.
This is Donald for the stack.
And Bill, I was on the stack too.
Donald, and Grace for the stack. And Grace.
Okay, we got Donald. We got Bill. We got Grace. Lawrence, go ahead.
I'm sorry, I was on mute. Yeah, I'm on mute.
Okay, go ahead.
I was talking while I was on mute. So, Matthew, there's a lot of concern. A lot of constituents and on the ground out there, in the community, there's a lot of concern about underwriting. I just want to state that. What is fear, there's just a lot of concern about that because of the tradition and the mission of Pacifica. The second point that I would like to make is that I believe and others believe that a community needs assessment needs to be done before, we attempt to do anything in terms of the metrics that you mentioned. There needs to be listener direct input in to augment the audience data that you're talking about. So I'm hoping that would look at that as one of the matrices that could be utilized as well. Thank you.
Yeah, so let me respond real quick. On the first point, information is power. It's important that we stop operating out of positions of fear because we don't know. So edification, getting training, getting expert understanding, being provided information that informs us, means that we'll be making decisions from a much better place than I would argue sometimes occurs currently, where people will make statements like, you know, I don't believe that this will work for us because we've never done it before or something like that. So I just want to be real clear. The whole point of having these information sessions is so that we're not working from faith, belief, and fear and anecdote. We're actually operating out of a deep understanding of things that work, that have been proven research-wise, data-wise, that are best practices throughout the entire industry. That's number one. In terms of your second point, I'm the biggest champion for community engagement. It's why I'm a huge advocate for the community advisory boards going a step further than our initial step, and that is to make them CPB compliant, but to actually make them truly reflective of the communities that we serve. And to do that in a way that is slotted so that we have geographic, demographic, and in some respects, psychographic makeup defined in advance so that we can make sure that the boards continue while they roll over to represent our communities robustly, racially, professionally, diversity in income, diversity in all kinds of metrics that can be used, and making sure that we have activists on our community advisory board. So there's no one you'll find that champions audience ascertainment and even more importantly, community ascertainment than me. So I agree with you wholeheartedly that that should be done. It should be a part of the equation that informs not only our boards, our committees, but also our stations moving forward. If we really want to be a public service organization that is user driven.
Okay. Donald, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm not sure where to start here, but let me take a whack at this. So the focus of this motion is to educate committee members of various committees, the PNB and all the PNB committees, and I'm assuming the LSBs as well, though I could be wrong about that. In principle, I don't have a problem with that because I do think that people come on these boards with a lack of media experience or skills to help them understand how media is operating in the 21st century. And that's part one. So in principle, I don't necessarily disagree with the thrust of the motion. But you said something in making your argument that since you've been here, you know, you discovered that most of the program directors are clueless about the underlying information and data they need to make programming decisions. And I don't necessarily have an argument with that, but I've not been at each of the stations.
Point of order.
Yes.
Improv.
Hold on, let me finish the point.
No, I don't want you to finish the point. It's
okay.
Improper on a public stream to disparage an individual staff person or staff people in aggregate. Please,
and
it's
to,
not
and to that
proper
point,
thing to figure
to
out
that point,
a different
yeah.
way to get your point across.
Right. And let me just say to that point, I didn't say they were clueless. I just said they hadn't been exposed to audience
okay,
research.
I'm talking about what yeah. Well, I'm talking about what Donald was just.
No,
saying.
I know. I'm just making sure that I make it clear
okay.
in support of what you're saying.
I'm not trying to mean to anybody. I'm just saying that you know this is a personnel matters.
Mm-hmm.
And the individual or aggregate need to be confined to unstreamed. This is a streamed meeting. It's being streamed, right?
Yes, we are on the stream.
Yes, it is.
Okay. So then we really need to restrain ourselves from in any way denigrating or criticizing staff individually or collectively.
Okay. Thank you for your point of order, Grace. Very well taken. Donald, can you go ahead and rephrase, please?
I will hold off for the moment. I'll let other people go, okay. And I'll figure out how I want to rephrase what I have to say.
All right, sounds good. We'll go to Bill now. You want to start?
Okay, thanks. And yeah, you know, I could talk about underwriting and other things too, but I'll let you go back to the motion. I think training it really is important. I mean, it's not just for our boards and committees. I think in general, it's a really important thing for any kind of professional position. It's standard that you're going to be expected to always keep learning more about your field. Things progress. We can learn from each other, meaning, you know, competitors, people doing the same thing in other businesses, organizations, and all this kind of stuff. And I think we should really encourage that. And yes, there's essentially no requirements for expertise in anything or experience to be elected to our boards. And so we have, you know, a variety of backgrounds, but it's not necessarily what we need to be board members. And I think, and I know there's a lot of online resources, for example, I've shared with some of you, I don't know how many have looked at it, but for, you know, what a good board member should be like. And there's things that are common to all nonprofit boards, regardless of whether it has anything to do with radio or anything like that. And I think we need to be looking at stuff like that. And I'm talking about all of the LSBs, not just PNB. Our LSB used to have an orientation workshop. One time we had a weekend retreat. I think it started Friday evening and it went till midday Sunday. Usually it's been half a day or two-thirds of a day on a Saturday. We haven't had one of those in about 3 years, but we had them used typically in late November or early December after the delegate elections were announced, and we get all the new people and returning people together, and or hopefully all of them, and we'd, you know, go over some of the basics, a little bit of our bylaws, board member responsibilities, fiduciary duties, how to get involved, what we're doing on our committees. A lot of people don't even know what our committees are doing, for example. And to help people decide which committees they might want to be on where they could actually contribute and not just show up for meetings. Because we have a lot of people, I think at all of our stations probably, who may attend meetings, but that's all they do. And we have a sort of a standing rule at KPFT that everybody's supposed to be actively involved in at least one committee. And that means more than just attending the meetings. But it's hard to enforce that. And I think if we had something meaningful people that they could learn a little bit more about what the committee's potential could be. For example, outreach or development, you know, those are really needed. And how you could actually help with that, it would really great to have some expertise. So I think we need general board training for all of our LSBs. And I think what Max is talking about also is specific expertise training for specific committees. And I think 30 minutes a quarter, I don't think is enough. I think we need, we should be doing some as soon as we can, but I think we should plan for whenever the delegate election's over this year, you know, help LSB set up some sort of orientation workshop or whatever we're going to call it, ideally before the new boards are seated in December, but also have things for our committees and have online information as well as some period of time during the meetings. Sorry, I went on so long.
All right. It's okay. No. It's all right. Everybody's sticking their claim here. We're at 6:09 and we got started late. So we're going to wrap everybody up after about 90 seconds or so. That does not pertain to you being on the stack. And Grace, go ahead. But after Grace, we'll wrap the time, you guys, so we can get done in a timely manner and get to a vote on Maxie's motion. Sound good to everybody? Is anybody opposed to what I just said? Okay, great. Grace, go ahead.
Okay, I think that there are several things here. I'm not completely opposed to the motion, except that it seems to me that the committees should decide what they want to be educated on to a certain extent. So I think that, for instance, when it comes to underwriting, we're going from a position in terms of board members and stations, that we've had a brand for Pacifica that we were independent and didn't take corporate underwriting. Now, to parse this, if you get money from a nonprofit, it's still corporate underwriting. Nonprofits almost always incorporated. So to say that they're not corporations is not correct. I mean, if we want to redefine it and say that our brand is that we don't take commercial nonprofit or underwriting, but there are certain steps that need to be decided before we get educated on underwriting. So, for instance, I don't think that practically speaking, underwriting would be a benefit for us because our listenership is so low that it may not generate enough money, because I believe corporate underwriting is based on the number of listeners you have. So the infrastructure needed to develop corporate underwriting may not work out to be profitable. In other words, it may take more money. There may be a higher cost to hire staff to get the corporate underwriting than the corporate underwriting would bring in, or any underwriting would bring into the station. So KPFK has done media sponsorships of a sort, and we have banner ads on our websites, but this is not producing a significant amount of income for KPFK. So I don't believe. And you can see what's being done on the internet on our website. But is it beneficial? Would it be beneficial to Pacifica? We have to analyze whether it's going to be beneficial to go in this direction before we spend time focusing on training about underwriting. I mean, is it a good idea or not? It may be a good idea for a station that has 500,000 listeners a month, but not our stations. So there's some analysis needed as to what education we need before we start having people addressing our committees. I think I have no objection to this, as long as the committees want the particular education that's being suggested.
Can I respond?
Okay. All right. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. Let me respond. First and foremost, for the record, I want it to be abundantly clear that I don't advocate for underwriting one way or the other. My argument is that we should have policy for those stations that choose to do it. That's number one. So I want to get that straight for the record publicly, because there's a lot of belief that I'm trying to force us to do underwriting. That's not what I'm trying to do. I want policy for those stations who either do it officially or unofficially to govern it. That's number one, those who choose to engage. But I want to really address what you said directly. This is why we need the education. When I ran WEAA in Baltimore, Maryland, much like the community radio stations that our Pacifica stations are, even dual format with 40 volunteer programmers, we only had 80,000 listeners. And in 1 year, I hired one underwriting executive, paid her more than I made as the general manager of the station. She increased revenue by 300%. Our audience went up to 140,000 listeners within that year. And not because of underwriting, but I want to make it very clear, all of our stations, with the exception of Houston, are in that ballpark in terms of audience. So this notion that we're too small to succeed with underwriting is false. This notion that underwriting is costly and possibly not fundable in a way that would be responsible for Pacifica is also false, because there's lots of evidence, and we would know this if we got formal information, that you don't even have an underwriting person if they can't generate at least 2 to 3 times what they cost you to have them on your staff. That's usually the model that you use. But the bigger important issue here is written in this motion, and that is that the chair of the committee works with the executive director to define who is provided as the educator to the committee. So that means that I work with whoever is the chair of the strategic planning committee to decide who should be brought forth to that committee. And there's nothing that would be improper for the chair to survey the committee members to see what they would like to be edified about. The only reason I put that clause in there is because what I don't want to have happen is this sort of incestuous approach of getting people who don't have contacts with experts in the field, getting people to come speak to the committee that either further an idea that isn't industry standard or mm-hmm. doesn't represent best practices. And so I think it's important, since I have that background.
Caveat is to make sure that there is a filter, a proper filter to
ensure that the
right people are speaking to, the right people are informing people. Okay.
But it's collaborative with the chair and the executive director. It's not only the executive director who decides that.
Checks and balances totally makes sense.
Absolutely.
Lawrence to the stack.
Donald, were you, hold on 1 second. Lawrence, I'm going to see if Donald was able to rephrase. I'm going to come back to Donald real quick. Donald?
What I was trying to get at earlier is that you put a lot of emphasis on Arbitron and Nielsen ratings to help us understand what's going on. And you have visited all the stations. I assume you've listened to all the shows and all the stations and have made an assessment of your own of what's going on. How important, well, have you been able to do that? Is my question.
I monitor the stations on a regular basis. I cannot say that I've heard every show on every station. There's far too many. But I am familiar with many of the shows, particularly during the key day parts of 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. I also, as I mentioned earlier, work directly with the PDs, not only on the weekly calls, but often I have sidebar conversations with them about their program schedules, about the programming on there and new shows that they're trying to introduce or existing shows that they're trying to improve upon. So hopefully that answers your question to some degree in terms of how deeply involved I am in understanding the program.
So the second part of the question is, have you formed conclusions about what's working, what's not working at these stations?
Well, because I believe you need to see audience data, and our stations are just now receiving that, I think we've got I guess the best way to put it is the jury's still out on what's working and not. What we have is a snapshot of, let's say, a month or two that tells us the high-performing shows on each station. And so I can tell you, like at WBAI in New York, Democracy Now! Is by far the headliner at that station in Morning Drive. I can also tell you that less than half of Democracy Now!'s audience is listening to them in the hour prior to. And after Democracy Now! Goes off, it's less than half that's listening afterwards. So there's some work that needs to be done with the two programs that flank that show, because obviously the audience that comes in for Democracy Now! Doesn't find them worthwhile. So that's one bit of analysis. But there's a whole lot more that could be ascertained as more data becomes evident. So it's just too early. For instance, the station in Houston performs very well share-wise with a show that focuses on African programming, African music programming. That's not necessarily their primary format, and so it's an anomaly. It'd be interesting to know why that happened. Is there an opportunity to build on that audience? And if so, what would that look like? And so that's just some examples.
Okay, Lawrence, go ahead. Thank you, Mike. Mm-hmm.
And Grace for the sec.
And Grace for the sec after Lawrence. Lawrence, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Go right ahead.
So, Matty, I'm having a difficult time reconciling whether I should support this motion or not. Due to some of the points that Grace made that were very cogent to me in regards to dictating this, and it's, for lack of a better word, it's not a negative connotation to it, but dictating the terms to the committees. I think what this motion needs to be reworked a little bit, and I would suggest that you approach the committees, since you already attend them, and also ask them, elicit, you know, what are some of the things that they believe they need to work on. So so I'm having trouble reconciling whether I should support this motion or not due to those reasons. Thank you.
Well, let me respond to that real quick. I think first and foremost, if the conclusion is true, that Bill articulated, that Donald articulated, and that I said, that a majority, if not all, of members of certain committees don't come to the table with experience in that area. Okay? So we have people, let's say, on the audit committee, and maybe only one person has ever done anything around auditing. Okay? Or we have people on the programming committee, and only one person in an entire committee has ever programmed anything. To ask them what they need to learn about, I think, is wishful thinking that you're going to get a result that is reflective of a better approach, I would argue, of having people who understand what are essential things for people involved in programming to know about and offering that. And you could ask, or you could offer several choices and say, here's five areas of programming that we'd like to bring forth to the committee. Prioritize to us which ones you would like to have, and we'll start with those. I mean, I think there's way, I think we're dissecting this a little too deeply. First of all, the conversation about underwriting went way too deep because underwriting doesn't even have to show up, in this equation, as a point of edification. The most important thing is to understand that we've got, you know, several committees that deal with different aspects of radio station operations. And the key question we should be asking ourselves is, do people on those committees need to learn more about the industry that we are in with respect to their committee? And if so, what can we bring forward to them, and how frequently should we do it, and in what manner should we do it for them to benefit the most? And I think this motion is, should be, in my opinion, really looked at more about, is education valuable for our membership, for, I'm not for our membership, but our representatives on our committees and boards. And if you believe that that's the case, then quite honestly, I don't know why we would have a hesitancy about this, because it's a low bar in terms of 30 minutes per quarter. I mean, we're talking 2 hours in an entire year. If someone were to serve on the board, I mean, on any committee, 2 hours out of an entire year for, of training. So I'll leave it at that. So I understand, you know, if you're having trouble with it, I'm sorry I wasn't able to be more convincing, but I don't want us to get hung up on specific areas. And more, I think we have to ask the question, is
well, let me clear it up for Lauren. Lauren, see, there is a lot of drilling down that needs to be done. There's a lot of drilling down as far as who needs what education. Each demographic of our units, each station, is going to be different, and they're all going to have different needs. This motion is a very generalized motion as far as, do we need it, yes or no? And if we do, then we need to move forward and start filling in the blanks, putting in the necessary guts for each individual unit. KPFK is going to be a whole different world in comparison to WPFW. WBAI, whole different world in comparison to KPFA, et cetera, et cetera. Is there anybody else that wants to speak to or against this motion? If not, then we're going to go ahead to a vote. We're at 6:25 now. Bill, go ahead. Are you speaking for?
And for. And I like the, I mean, I think we need a lot more than this, but this will be a good start, and we can, there's nothing that keeps.
Well, like I was saying, this is a yes or no. Do we?
Yeah.
Well, we're trying to agree right now. We're just trying to agree. For the record, let me say this. We're just trying to agree whether or not this type of education needs to move forward. That's all we're doing right now, everybody.
Yeah, okay. And I think so. And I like the idea of having the ED work with the chairs of the committees and then LSBs to, you know, figure out what's applicable to them. To edit on the therefore paragraph, the third sentence, a third line, it has edification. I think that should be education. This is 30 minutes of meeting time quarterly for edification, so I move that we amend that by changing that word to education, unless Maxie's wants something else.
I mean, I'm fine either way. If it makes people more comfortable to say education, I'm fine with that.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Okay, this is Grace. I have an amendment.
Okay, Grace, go right ahead.
Okay, I suggest that the entire sentence, and whereas anecdote, tradition, and belief are lesser than research-based and data-driven expertise and experience, I think we should remove that sentence entirely, because I think that tradition, belief, and belief are very important to Pacifica. In terms of the Pacifica mission is important to the members and the boards. Tradition has importance to us as well. I don't have a strong belief that data-driven expertise and research-based and data-driven expertise and experience are necessarily that positive. That can be used in a good way or a bad way. And I don't think that this is important to this motion.
Can you clarify what you're wanting to delete? Which paragraph is that?
She's wanting to delete the last paragraph.
And whereas anecdote, tradition, and belief are lesser than research-based.
Okay.
If you say research-based and data-driven expertise and experience can be beneficial, that would be fine. But it can be misunderstood to be just invalidating one of the core reasons that people are on this board, and that's that we care about the core beliefs of this foundation more than we care about making money or being popular.
Yeah, let me respond to that. I don't think that's what this is saying. I think when you talk about having information so that you can make decisions, whether it be around finance, development, programming, engagement, or whatever other area of radio station operations, what I'm saying is instead of people saying, this is what I saw happen at my station anecdotally, and I'll give you a perfect example. I was at WBAI. One of the members of the LSD made the statement that doing hyper-promotion of Democracy Now! Would not benefit the rest of the station. Well, that's empirically false. What has been proven by research and data through NPR Spark project is that when you highlight and promote your most popular programming, it actually raises the level of audience for your entire station. And so that belief she had, that anecdotal idea based on something she might have seen, was lesser in value to the group than the knowledge I was able to provide, the expertise I was able to provide, because I actually participated in the Spark project. And I saw the results. And so the experience I had, the research I've read, the data I saw in my audience number was much more useful than her belief, which was based on nothing. And so when I say lesser, I'm saying that to put an emphatic statement here that it's important that this organization evolve past anecdote, faith, and belief, because we have to become much more driven in our tools and in our practices by instruments that are objective and are at least more objective and can be documented and are more evidentiary than what we have used in the past. And again, that has nothing to do with believing in being progressive or the mission of Pacifica. That's an unrelated statement, and it shouldn't be confused. Believing in the mission of Pacifica has nothing to do with using research and data-driven tools to understand how to best program our stations. Unrelated issues.
Let me interrupt you right there, Rick.
Lawrence, point of order. Lawrence has the point of order.
Okay, Lawrence, go ahead. What's your point of order?
Yes, Grace proposed an amendment, and I just want to say that I second that amendment. I think that's in order.
Okay. So, okay, but we actually, also, what I was going to suggest is a new language for it, new language for this particular replacement or elimination of that line. Go ahead, Grace.
Okay. You know, I understand, Maxie, what you're saying, but if I misinterpreted this, then other people are going to, in my opinion. And also, this other paragraph that came before this, I'd like to change my own amendment. To also include eliminating this whereas clause, the second one, which is whereas specific foundation boards and committees are comprised of non-media professionals and or individuals without expertise relevant to the boards and committees in which they serve, in addition to those with direct expertise and experience. You know, I think that having been on a number of boards myself, if you're on the audit committee, you do not have to be an auditor or CPA to understand an organization audit or to choose an audit firm. If you're on the finance committee, you don't have to be a CPA to understand how a budget works and to read an income statement or a balance sheet. Extreme expertise is not necessary. Lots of nonprofits operate with board members who are not CPAs, not professionals in the field that they're board members of. So I don't think that this is relevant necessarily. I mean, I think the board, I agree with education and taking time in our committees for education, but disrespecting the contribution of our board members by saying that they're not really, and implying that we're not really qualified, or a significant number of us are not qualified to be serving on the boards we're serving, I think is insulting and will, it's not appropriate for this motion. And just take out that second and third paragraph. The motion itself, the suggestion itself, I really don't have find much fault with it. If it works from the concept that nobody on these boards is capable of just making a decision, that nobody on the program committee who isn't a radio professional has anything valid to say, and nobody on the audit committee who isn't an auditor has anything valid to say, that anyone on the finance committee who's not a CPA has nothing valid to say and is educated for those committees, that to me is the implication in this statement. I'm exaggerating a little bit, but I don't think that it's necessary. I think that the second and third paragraph should be eliminated.
What I would say in response to that is that the description actually encompasses those who are directly aligned with the committee they serve in terms of expertise, and those who don't bring that. And it's an admission that most boards, as you say, are comprised of people who have expertise in a given area and those who don't. That's common, and I agree with you. I've experienced that myself. I served on the Development Exchange Board for 6 years. I've never done development work personally, at least before joining that board, but I had other ways that I could contribute value. So I don't disagree with you that people who don't necessarily have an expertise should be able to serve on various committees. What I'm saying is we've got a whole, because we have a blend of folks. But I will say this. I have no problem removing this segment because at the end of the day, it's not as important as, in my opinion, pushing this motion through, if that's going to be a point of hang-up. Because I think the key word in there is relevant. That may be the one that's off-putting. But I'm not by any stretch of the imagination saying that people who aren't who don't have expertise in a given area shouldn't serve on the board. That would be hypocritical of myself. I don't believe that for a minute. I just am simply stating the very fact that our committees are fielded by people who do and don't have expertise in the areas that they are operating in. And so therefore, edifying them, providing educational opportunities, training, whatever, is important. And that, to me, is the whole point of that sentence. So, again, if it distracts because it seems too pointed and is offensive to others, then I'm fine with taking it out because, again, the most important thing to me is not defining the board makeup, committee makeup. It's providing an opportunity for edification.